prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's Cash 'em.
That is so good, but that's exactly right.
Or Trash 'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a killer bees.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
All right, Cash 'em or Trash 'em. The hot takes, the overreactions from the weekend. We sell it to you. Tell us if you're going to cash 'em or if you're going to trash 'em. Usually we leave it off to Blankers. B-Mac Blankers is taking care of
the older statesman.
As the older statesman. The dad's not here today of the show, so we're kind of doing whatever we want since Blankers isn't here to control us. Are you older than me?
I think I am. I'm 39.
Okay, yeah. So age before beauty. You can lead us off.
I think I'm age and beauty in this scenario. But I think, obviously, the reaction to seeing what Travis Kelce did this last weekend, I think it was 14 catches, two of those being touchdowns. And obviously, the guy's consistently great for the last, five, six, 7 years, whatever it's been. But I think people have rushed now to anoint him as the best tight end in NFL history. And I would fire back that he's not even the best tight end in his own team's history, that being, of course, Tony Gonzalez, the other one. I looked at the numbers. If Travis Kelce were to catch Tony Gonzalez in receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns, we're looking at a difference of about 5,000 yards, 500 receptions, and I believe it was 41, 42 touchdowns. So Travis Kelce, when this next season starts, I believe in October, is going to be 34.
Yeah.
If he's going to catch Tony Gonzalez in those stats, let's say he plays another 5 years, which I think is generous considering he'd be 39 if he did that. But if he did that, even if he did, he'd have to average over 100 catches, right at 1,000 yards, and 8-9 touchdowns a year to catch Tony Gonzalez in those stats. So Travis Kelce is going to go down as easily, I think, top three, maybe even top two tight end in NFL history, but he is not Tony Gonzalez, or at least hasn't been to this point.
I like the wording that you use, that Travis Kelce's not even the greatest tight end ever. He's not even the greatest tight end in his organization's history.
Hey, it was a little bit of
Tony Gonzalez is probably the greatest tight end ever.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Probably the same guy.
It was an intentional shot.
Who do you think's the better running back, Emmitt Smith or Barry Sanders?
Talent-wise, Barry Sanders. Obviously, statistical-wise, Emmitt Smith did more.
I have an all-encompassing sports take that there is a difference between the better resume and the better talent. Like, I think Tom Brady has the greatest NFL resume of all time. Do I think he was more talented than Peyton Manning? I don't.
No, I don't either.
I think that Emmitt Smith had a better running back resume than Barry Sanders, but I think Barry Sanders is the better talent. That's how I view this. That's how I view Tony Gonzalez and Travis Kelce. Because the counting stats, you're right. Travis Kelce is going to have a very difficult time catching Tony Gonzalez in the counting stats. But Tony Gonzalez also played 270 games where Travis Kelce's played 144. Like, what? Gonzalez almost played double the amount of games that Travis Kelce has right now. So, like, I mean, Gonzalez was great. Like, I'm not trying to say that Gonzalez wasn't also, like, a specimen at the position. But you might be looking at a case where Gonzalez has the better resume, but Kelce's the slightly better talent.
And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but the other side of that, I would obviously point out that while Tony Gonzalez didn't play with a bunch of, just complete jobbers at quarterback, he did have Trent Green. I believe he had Matt Ryan in that run in Atlanta. He didn't have Patrick Mahomes, and that obviously gives Travis Kelce a leg up.
Yeah.
And also, Tony Gonzalez started his career in the 90s, whereas Travis Kelce started his career in a much more pass-happy era. Not that the 90s
right.
was some, barbaric, run 80% of the time style of football, but it wasn't as pass-happy as we see now.
I just like the team history thing that you took. Like, he's Gonzalez the greatest tight end ever, potentially. You want to go with team history, yeah. I'm going to cash this.
Thank you.
I'm going to cash, because Tony Gonzalez in this offense would be a freak.
He would.
He'd be a freak.
And I think people, like I pointed out, I mean, Tony Gonzalez, I believe, was a rookie in 97. If you put Tony Gonzalez in the same offense, the same era, I think you see him not only match, but probably surpass what Travis Kelce's
done. I don't think it'll be a popular opinion, but I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Thank you.
I'm with you. I'm cashing this. Let's keep it Kansas City. Pat Mahomes' injury, and I think Pat Mahomes, one-legged Pat Mahomes, still the second-best quarterback in the NFL behind two-legged Pat Mahomes. But Pat Mahomes' injury is going to be their demise. The reason that Kansas City will not go to the Super Bowl is because of the high ankle sprain for Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, if you're telling me that he's severely limited in his mobility, I'm going to cash it. I guess it's one of those things, I can't truly cash it or trash it until I see what Mahomes looks like on the field. But if you're telling me Mahomes is limited in his mobility, and a lot of what makes him great is his ability to kind of improvise in the pocket, move around, buy times for guys to get open downfield, and kind of allow for the broken play to take over. If you take that away from Patrick Mahomes, then I certainly think you will see the Bengals win this game and go back to the Super Bowl, especially after what we saw from the Bengals defense last week. And I can't pronounce their defensive coordinator's name, but
right.
What he did to Josh Allen, especially late with that safety blitz, he just did not see coming at all. If you have a Patrick Mahomes that's limited in the pocket, can't move around, can't escape the rush, then I think the Bengals get this done and go to the Super Bowl.
Limits him a bit. It's going to limit Pat Mahomes' mobility. I still think that he's more than capable of beating you in the pocket. But that, look, the NFL is one on the margins, and it's that margin, that ability to escape that the Bengals are going to be able to push across Kansas City and go to their second Super Bowl in a row. All right, what's your second, cash 'em or trash 'em?
I'm going to tell you, Jeremy, that the Astros offense this year will be the best Astros offense in franchise history. They will score more runs this year in the 2023 season than they ever have in the history of their franchise. And I say that for a few reasons, but mostly just because what we saw from this Astros offense as far as its weak spots last year, you had Alex Bregman getting off to a slow start. You had Michael Brantley get injured. Jeremy Pena, after a hot start in April, kind of trailed off in June, July, and August. And obviously, Yuli Gurriel didn't have a great offensive season in the regular season, as you pointed out, with, I believe, like a .240 batting average. The good news, as of now, on paper, all that's been solved. Alex Bregman seemed to figure it out. Jeremy Pena matured before our very eyes, won the ALCS and World Series MVP. He now replaced Yuli Gurriel with Jose Abreu, someone who we believe is a much better hitter. And as of now, Michael Brantley is healthy, and GM Jeff Bagwell told us he's going to be ready for the regular season. So I think if you look at this lineup with all those questions from last year answered, you're talking about a lineup. Oh, we didn't even name Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker. You're talking about an offense that's seven deep with great, great hitters. And especially in this era now where the shift is gone, where you could have taken some things away from maybe Yordan Alvarez and Tucker and Brantley, the left-handed hitters, I think that's going to translate into the best offensive season we've ever seen from an Astros offense.
Do you know what the greatest Astros offense has been to date?
In terms of what? Run scored?
Run scored.
No, I do not.
2,000 Astros that were 72 and 90.
Oh, Richard Hidalgo hit like 40-something home runs. Yeah.
Richard Hidalgo was their
the first year at Minute Maid Park.
Top player, yeah. Minute Maid Park, the dimensions, the peak of the performance enhancing drugs era.
Oh, yeah.
Not to say that any of the Astros were on it. We're not saying that at all.
Well, we're not saying they
were. We're not saying that at all. Mitch Molusky was a rookie. Like, his only good year in Major League Baseball was that year where he hit 300. Jeff Bagwell.
What, Berkman's first full season? Was that Berkman's first full season? I think he came up
Yeah, he played 114 games. So,
okay.
Not quite full season,
but close enough.
Close enough. Like, that team had, let's see, they had 330 home run hitters. Bagwell hit 47. Hidalgo hit 44. And they still had Moises Alou, who I think is a criminally underrated offensive player. He hit 355 that year. They just had zero pitching on that team. Now, the second best offense. Yeah, Chris Holt led them in innings pitched. The second best offense.
Jose Lima could not deal with that ballpark.
Yeah, he was ruined. It ruined him. The second best offense based on runs was 2019. Now, this was the team that won 107 games.
Probably the most talented team in team history.
I would. Injuries, you could argue 18 because of the injuries you had in 19,
so.
But it's hard to argue against. I'm not going to die on that hill. And then, of course, in 19, you had, you know, Yuli, Altuve, Correa, Bregman, Brantley, Reddick, Yordan, George Springer, and then you also had Kyle Tucker come up. So
I would say, though, in 19, you're still kind of in the juice ball era. So, I mean obviously.
Not as much as 2000. And the dimensions as well. The 2019, there's no way you had more runs scored in 19 than 2000 for Major League Baseball. No way. No way.
No, but we did see an uptick in home runs around that time around. I mean, obviously, 17, we saw what happened in Game 5 of the World Series.
Yeah.
Around that time, maybe in 19, it started to go back the other direction. I don't know exactly the numbers on that, but that's still
the offensive
kind of
factors
a part of
had
the life.
To be better in 2000.
Yeah,
had
maybe
to
so.
Be better in 2000.
Maybe so.
So like that's who you're competing with though. The 2000 Astros, who were not a very good baseball team, but they scored tons of runs in the first year at Minute Maid Park, and then the 19 Astros that were just
I think
loaded
they
from top to
19.
Bottom.
Obviously, a lot of those guys are here. I think you have a better version of Yordan Alvarez. Uh-huh. I think Jeremy Pena. I mean, Jeremy Pena's already had a 20 home run season as a rookie. He can potentially surpass what Carlos Correa did around that time. So I think there's not really not a reason other than the obvious one of health.
Sure,
well, that they couldn't surpass that team.
I think what the two things that are going to have to happen for this to happen are one, the young guys are going to have to continue to have a healthy dose of development and progression going forward. And then the elder players are going to have to not go backwards. Jose
You're
Abreu,
going to need to see Jose Abreu's home run total
sure.
tick up.
Yeah. He needs to find that power, which the advanced numbers, like, love Jose Abreu.
Yeah, and the ballpark factors would sure. say he's going to hit more home runs.
And I don't think
season.
He loved the cold weather.
No.
But Abreu can't go backwards. He needs to take an uptick in home runs. Jose Altuve last year was unbelievable. No one expected Jose Altuve to have that type of year where he's at in his career. Alex Bregman probably needs to have another good year. Now, there are two holes offensively for the Astros going into the season. Injuries have to, you know, you can't get hurt. Catcher position, like, you got nothing in the catcher spot.
You probably play Maldonado.
Yeah, so you're going to get nothing there. And then in center field, you're going to need one of those dudes to step up.
And we saw some positive things from Chaz over the court, especially the last half of the year in the playoffs.
Sure.
But there definitely is
Define
one of the two.
What's our barometer here? Like, how are we defining the best offense? Or is it runs?
Well, I would say runs scored, yeah.
I'm going to say they don't finish in the top five.
In franchise history,
okay. I don't think that they'll finish in
so
top
you're,
five.
You're trashing
I
it
am
then.
Trashing this one.
All right.
All right, my last one, real quick. The Oscars announced their nominees for Best Picture. There are 10 nominees for best. What is going on? Like, they need to limit this to 4 or 5. More than 4 or 5 is unacceptable.
I don't know when it changed, because it did used to be, you know, a list of 5 or 6. But at least for the last couple years, it's gone up to just an obscene amount. And maybe it's just kind of a participation trophy thing?
It's become a participation trophy.
Just get a lot of movies on the list. I did look at the list, and I don't know how many you've seen. I've only seen 2.
I've seen 1.
Okay, I've seen Top Gun Maverick, and I've seen Elvis. Those are the only two I've seen.
I didn't think Elvis was great.
I didn't think it was great. Movie of the year.
No,
great.
No
I,
chance.
I enjoyed it, but I didn't think it was best movie
I thought
of
it
year.
Was pretty good.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
thought it was pretty good. I used to do a thing where I would try to watch every film that was nominated for Best Picture.
It's a lot easier when there's only 5 or 6.
Yeah, you're doing 10, I'm out. Now, I quit on this a long time ago. Like, I stopped doing this like 5, 7 years ago. Maybe it's something I'll take back up in retirement. But yeah, you're putting 10 nominees for Best Picture? That's too many, man.
Yeah,
the list has got to be somewhere between 4 and 5. I think
the committee just got tired of choosing, and they just let everybody on. It feels like
this is a bigger conversation about society, is what it is. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Are you cashing them or are you trashing them? Jeremy Fowler, who is a friend of the Killer Bees. He has the Texans doing something very interesting in the offseason involving the quarterback position. I have a feeling you're not going to like it. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It is, it's never a good time to be arrested after domestic violence. It's a really bad time to do it the week of your team playing in the conference championship game. Did you see this? Former Texan Charles Amenihue got arrested last night for...
Former Longhorn as well.
Yeah, yeah. Once a Longhorn, always a Longhorn, VMAC. You
Unless
should know
you're
that.
Chris Beard, then we're done with you.
I guess it's in the water there in the 40 acres because Charles Amenihue arrested.
I opened myself up to that. Okay, that's on me.
Amenihue was arrested. The domestic violence allegation in San Jose. I mean, this has got to tick off everybody in that organization. I mean, it should always tick off everybody in the organization. This is never acceptable, but it's especially not acceptable.
Have they announced anything as to if he'll play or not? I mean, I hope the answer is no. It should be no.
It should be no. They tweeted out that they're aware of the situation and are on, like, you know, they're keeping an eye on it. So we'll see. He's also a free agent at the end of the season.
Yeah,
he just cost himself some money.
Yeah, you're not bringing him back. I mean, if I'm running the team, you're not bringing him back.
No. Maybe this is why Easterby traded him. He knew the true character of Charles Amenihue.
To give Easterby credit here, he, right. Yeah. Well, what was the future state thing where they were able to look ahead into your future and see if you're going to commit a crime and just off
a
you
tarot
before
you, reader?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was, but yeah, maybe Easterby had that thing in the office there on Kirby.
I mean, baby mamas with DeAndre.
Oh, there we go.
Domestic abuse from Minnehue. Who else did he get at? Zach Cunningham for a bad attitude.
Yeah.
You're just, you know, weeding out the problems.
Clearly.
Just weeding out the problems. He
maybe
saw this
weeded himself out.
What
got
is
rid of the biggest problem?
I mean, I know that people still break down 2 hours of Jack Easterby on podcast. I know that's still a thing around the city. Never us.
I'm out on that.
It's a weird thing to do, by the way. 713-780
ESPN. Might that have been one of our former coworkers?
Potentially.
I can either tell me off the air.
Confirm or deny. Yeah, highway to hell for sure. 713-780-3776. Blankers had to go tend to a fevered daughter. That's why he's not here today. So, you know, we hope that they're all doing well. And they are, but just had to pick up his daughter from school. We understand that in today's day and age. Jeremy Fowler, who is a huge fan of the Killer Bees, we have him on all the time and always so super excited to be on with us. He predicted kind of the quarterback offseason, the quarterback carousel, which a lot of times the quarterback carousel is a lot more entertaining than the coaching carousel, unless your team's involved in the coaching carousel. Texans are probably going to be involved in both, right? Coaching carousel and quarterback carousel.
Seems
can't
so.
Imagine Davis Mills being the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans next year. We'll get into some of these, where he thinks these quarterbacks are going to land. But his quarterback that he has landing in Houston is David Carr's brother, Derek. I can't really see a scenario where Derek Carr is the quarterback of the Houston Texans, especially on his cap figure. Now, if he gets released, because I mean, it's going to be difficult for a team to trade for him.
I don't think $40 million. Traded. Yeah, I, because of the contract, I think he's ultimately released.
And the Raiders, like, every team has the Raiders over the barrel. Derek Carr has the Raiders over the barrel.
He is not coming back. Yeah,
the Raiders have.
There's no leverage for Oakland.
Exactly.
Sorry, Las Vegas.
There's no leverage for Oakland. There's no leverage for Las Vegas either. They can't move on with David Carr's brother Derek as their quarterback. They have a big cap figure that's due at whatever the date is. I think July 1st. That they either have to make a decision on Derek Carr or they don't make a decision on Derek Carr. I don't think that Derek Carr gets traded. I think that Derek Carr ultimately gets released this offseason and will be a free agent to sign with any team that he wants to sign with. Because that cap figure, why are you trading for it? And then also, you know that the Raiders aren't going to bring him back. But Jeremy Fowler mentions that Derek Carr will sign with the Houston Texans. Not a fan of this. It's not my ideal situation. I don't want David Carr's brother, Derek, back with the Houston Texans. I will say, there is one way where I would be semi-okay with this scenario of David Carr's brother being the quarterback of the Houston Texans. One, it's not a trade. First and foremost, it can't be a trade. I don't want that cap figure. They have to cut him, and then you have to sign him as a free agent. Secondly, you have to hire a defensive-minded head coach. I don't want David Carr's brother if you sign Kafka or Shane Steichen to be the next head coach of the Houston Texans. If you're signing one of those two guys, then you better be going rookie quarterback. So it needs to be a defensive-minded guy. That defensive-minded guy under this scenario is D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans is a way to entice him for the Houston Texans. You tell him, look, we're going to load up your defense. We understand you're coming from San Francisco, top defense in the NFL. You've done a great job with that, but part of the reason they are the top defense in the NFL is because they're loaded with talent. The Houston Texans have some pieces, but they're not loaded with talent. You know, we like Stingley, we think. We like Jalen Petrie most of the time. Christian Harris can be good. And that's kind of it. Like,
yeah,
Malik Collins, maybe. I like Malik Collins, but he's a little older. I wouldn't
put
him in that core.
Roy Lopez can maybe work into a rotation, but you're not
trying to out-recruit Roy Lopez. Let's be honest.
You're not hoping to start him every week.
You're looking to recruit over Roy Lopez.
Of course.
Roy Lopez belongs on the 53. He doesn't belong
that's
in the starting
11. Yeah, that's my point. 53, but not starting.
So you bring in D'Amico. You tell D'Amico, look, we understand that we love you as a defensive mind. We love you as a leader of men. We know that you need a little bit of help with that defensive side of the football. Not a tons of talent there. We're going to help you out there. Second pick, hey, somebody trades up for Bryce Young, you have your choice of Will Anderson, Jalen Carter. Whichever one you like the most, yours. Number 12, we might go best player available. Really good chance the best player available at 12 is a defensive player. So you bring in two defensive first-round picks for D'Amico Ryans. There's really nothing left in the draft outside of that. Maybe a Hendon Hooker, but you're probably not playing Hendon Hooker right away. Maybe it's a late-round flyer on a Clayton Tune, something like that, but you're probably not playing him right away. So, yeah, go Cougs. So you're going defense. You're selling out for defense because you hire a defensive-minded head coach. You're going defense at 2-12 because you want to give D'Amico Ryans some help on that side of the ball, which is his forte. It's his strength. So you're basically punting on quarterback for a little bit of time, maybe just a year. You have draft capital next year. So if you go that route, Derek Carr is cut, not traded. I think it's the only scenario where I would be somewhat okay with David Carr's brother as the next quarterback of the Houston Texans.
I like it for 2023. In the scenario you pointed out where Derek Carr is here and he's not bringing some sort of massive cap figure, and you basically turn over the first-round pick and probably the second-round pick to D'Amico Ryans and tell him, build your defense. Recreate what you had in San Francisco here with Petre, with Stingley, with Christian Harris, and these three picks here. I like that scenario where you could turn around the defense in maybe 1 year, and I think Derek Carr, as long as you maybe give him some other help in free agency at wide receiver and you don't just stick him with Nico Collins being his only guy out there, I think you could do something that would be pretty fun, and I think they could actually have a decent turnaround. Not playoffs, but a decent turnaround. My problem with this plan then is, in this scenario, like I just laid out, you're not winning three games. You're not winning four games. Right. You're probably up around six, seven, maybe even eight games. And even though I like that for 2023, I hate it for 2024 and beyond because I don't think Derek Carr is the long-term solution.
Nope.
And if you're building this great defense with Derek Carr, obviously greater sign than Davis Mills, you're not going to lose enough games to be able to go and get Caleb Williams or whoever you decide to be the top quarterback of 2024 unless – you package the two picks and then move up. Now, if that's part of the overall plan, then I really could get on board with this. But there's just a lot of variables mixed into that where you don't know where Cleveland's pick's going to be. Let's say they surprise you. Now they're in the 20s. Maybe the Texans win eight games and they're, I don't know, 12 or 13. Does 22 and 13 get you up to one or two to get the quarterback you want? Probably not.
I don't know.
I mean, it's possible. That's a large drop in this scenario. If you had to move up to one, and you're asking them to drop down to 11 or 12. So there's too many variables in that for me for 2024. But I do think it would make the on-field product in 23 a whole lot more entertaining.
You get a Will Anderson at two. You get somebody drops to 12. Brian Breesy.
Yeah. Whether it's
Tyree Wilson. I don't like cornerback there.
That's fine.
Cornerback at 12. I feel like it needs to be either an interior defensive lineman, an edge rusher, or a really good linebacker.
Yeah, I can be with that. Obviously, the run defense last year was putrid.
I want to address the way you get quarterback in that scenario. Like, again, I this is the only way that you bring Derek Carr into the mix as the Houston Texan quarterback. And you're right. It is only for 1 year. So how do you get that quarterback long term? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, our HRNP listener line. Pronon Coops, this is the season, right? College basketball is going on. It's hot and heavy right now. We're right around the corner. March is going to be here. We're just several weeks away from March. So everybody's loving basketball right now. NBA season's in full fold. Rockets broke that losing streak yesterday. They broke it last night. So this is the season for basketball.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You get a kick out of playing the song whenever you're producing one of my shows, don't you?
Well, I do like Pearl Jam. There's the other part of it. I'm a child of the 90s.
Killer Bee today.
My first name starts with a B.
Yeah, but you're on the wrong side of the glass. You're not talent.
Wow. Okay. I'm not talent.
No,
okay.
You're not talent.
Wow.
You're just a lowly producer.
I'm just a jobber producer over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's unfortunate. I thought we were friends. Yeah, I got to reevaluate this.
Yeah, that's where you went wrong, thinking. Blankers, he had to go home today. He had to pick up his daughter. His daughter a little under the weather. She had a fever. Can't have a fever at school, so Blankers had to go pick her up. We hope that she starts to feel a little bit better.
Is there a chance he faked this to get home before the rain got bad?
No, Blankers is an Iron Man.
Okay.
Like, I don't say many good things about Blankers, but if there is one strength of Blankers, the dude plays hurt, man. He is the Cal Ripken of the station. There's no doubt about that. He's an Iron Man, but he's a family man first. When the daughter is sick, family comes first.
I respect
okay.
that.
B-Mac filling in admirably, average at best, maybe.
How do you go from admirable to average?
It's a pretty
in
far
the same
range.
Sentence. Yeah.
Pretty far range. I'm gonna get into this more of this David Carr's brother Derek only scenario, which I would be somewhat content with him as the quarterback of the Houston Texans next year. But first, should we take this call? Gary's been on the line for 49 minutes, 13 seconds and counting.
Speaking of Iron Men.
Good point. to talk about the Cowboys. And Gary, there's two Garys that call in a lot. One Gary I really enjoy. The other Gary I enjoy just as much.
For a different reason.
Let's go out to the HRMP guest line for Gary. Appreciate your patience. What do you want to talk about, them boys? And then he's not there. Gary, what's up, Gary? All right, we got to hang up on him. He's not there. We tried.
I take back my Iron Man statement.
We tried. Gary, if you want to call back, you can. 713-780-3.
Cal Rupp took the day off.
He probably didn't think we were going to him, put us on hold, and went to take a leak. So if you get back, Gary, you can call in. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. A couple people asking some questions about the Chris from Sam Houston. Love him. One of my favorite Twitchers. He says, how do you know D'Amico wouldn't want Garoppolo instead of Carr? He might. Like, under this scenario that I painted out where this is the only way I would be okay playing the veteran quarterback carousel. I don't want to do this. This is very far on my list. I much rather draft rookie quarterback, however you get them. My stance with this draft is I want one of four players. I want it to be either Will Anderson. I want it to either be Jalen Carter. I want it to be Bryce Young. I want it to be Will Levis. I really don't care which of the four you get. I'm going to be happy with any one of those four. It's why I'm not a huge proponent of trading down when normally I'm a big fan of trading down, is because I think the Texans need to leave the draft with one of those four players. Now, if you can trade down to six or seven and still get Will Levis,
well,
power
there
to
would
you
be
love
the
it.
Option, and obviously I know you wouldn't hate it because it doesn't bother you as much, but fans would absolutely melt down if they traded from 2 to 4 to the Colts.
Right. Yeah, I don't care.
It wouldn't bother you because you would still get one of your four, and right. You pick up extra draft picks, and I know that would make you happy. Theoretically, but the city would absolutely melt down if that happened.
One of the things that I like, whenever you make interdivisional trades, people hate that. Oh, you're helping out the division. No, just beat them in the trade. If you win the trade against a divisional opponent, one, you won the trade, so you're better. And then two, they lost the trade, so they're worse. And I'm of the attitude where I'm not going to have this like loser mentality of like, oh, yeah, Chris Ballard's calling. I'm going to lose this trade, so I'm not even going to entertain the trade. No, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to screw him over. I'm going to win the trade. And because I win the trade against an interdivisional opponent, my team's better, his team's worse, period, end of story. That's the attitude I have.
But, I mean, if you trade them, even if it's to an NFC team, it's not like there's 0% chance where that player could come back and face you in an important situation. There's obviously scenarios where you would face them, and it could hurt you just as much. So, yeah, I'm with you. If you win the trade, then you get better, your rival gets worse. I don't see how that's a losing scenario.
Anybody who is scared of trading in your division, you're a scaredy cat. You're a wuss.
Or you're afraid that the people in charge will make the bad move.
From a fan perspective. But if I'm in the shoes of GM, if I'm in the shoes of Casario, and I'm like, if I'm in the shoes of the general manager and I'm scared of making an interdivisional trade, I'm a loser. I'm weak. I'm soft. I'm scared that I'm going to fail in this trade. And if you have that attitude as a general manager, you never have a chance anyways. You can't have that attitude and have success as a GM.
Yeah, only from the fan perspective, I'm with you most of the time. But sometimes you get stuck with the bad general manager and you just don't want them to make many moves at all.
Yeah.
So I side on that stance. If you're locked into a general manager who you don't trust to make moves at all, then maybe you don't want to make them, you know, inside the division and magnify the possible loss. But otherwise, I'm with you. If you're going to win the trade, it doesn't matter who the partner is.
I think it's a really fair point. Like, from a fan perspective, oh, I'm scared Casario is going to screw it up because he's not curried my favor. I don't trust him in a trade with Chris Ballard. I get that. But if you're sitting there acting scared in the shoes of a general manager in that position of power, I don't think you have any chance of being a good GM because you're acting scared. And I don't think that a scared general manager is going to be a very good general manager. But under the scenario where I would play the veteran quarterback market, and look, it could be David Carr's brother. It could be Jimmy Garoppolo. It could be somebody else that we don't know is going to be out in that quarterback market. The only way I'm doing that is defensive coach D'Amico or Gannon, and basically I'm trying to build up the defense for them with pick number 2 and number 22. Pick 2 and 12, I should say. 5-5-3-5. That's why you stash Hendon Hooker. I love that idea. If Hendon Hooker drops in this draft, like, I'm not spending a second rounder on a dude who's coming off a torn ACL that's 28 years old, but if I'm kidding slightly,
he's 25
at the draft. It's like, that's not an egregious kid.
No, it's
only
not Chris Winkie, but it is
right.
Old.
I would draft Hendon Hooker in the fourth round if he's there. Now, I fear he's not going to be, but if he slides
you wouldn't be willing to do it in the third round? In this scenario where you go defense at 2...
I need to see the board.
Well, let's paint the scenario. If you go defense at 2, let's say it's Will Anderson and Jalen Carter, you get your best defensive player available at 12, then you spend the first pick of the second round on them. at that
on defense
point,
too.
On defense as well. So at that point where you're playing to D'Amico's strengths, you pair those with the guys you already like from last season, Petre Stingley and Christian Harris. I think you're in a position there where you could take the swing on Hooker.
Obviously, I like it more in the fourth than the third.
Sure.
You're not spending as much draft capital.
But I think if you really like that guy, fourth round's a bit risky to wait that long, I believe. Unless there's a lot of red flags coming back around pro days with his medical.
That's the caveat, if you love him. And I don't even need to play him next year because, again, I'm playing the veteran quarterback market. He's my future there. And I'm also not totally ruling out the possibility that even if I draft Hooker, let's just say it's the third round pick for the sake of conversation. And it does add to the conversation. It makes the question a little bit more difficult too. Defense, you're selling out first three picks to, you know, entice the defensive coach that you're trying to hire. You take a flyer on a Hendon Hooker, don't mind it. Obviously preferred in the fourth round or the third. But even if you do that in the third round, I don't mind if you take your swing at quarterback in 2024.
Absolutely not.
You drew up the scenario, too, where you talked about, well, the Texans under this, you know, defensive-minded, good head coach, you get a pretty solid veteran quarterback, you win seven games. You're drafting in, you know, the somewhere between 12 to 15. Cleveland makes the playoffs. They're the 25th pick. Can 12 and 25 convince whoever's picking in the top two to trade down? There's no guarantee there. I think that the Texans, though, have enough draft capital. Two first-round draft picks next year. They have future picks as well. I believe that they would have enough draft capital to, let's say, if the Bears have the first pick. Like, if this draft order was next year's draft order with Caleb Williams, with Drake May, I think that you have enough capital to trade up to the Chicago Bears with where they're at right now. Now, it might take more than two first, because if you win and Cleveland wins, all of a sudden it doesn't have as much value.
Now you
it
might
doesn't
be
have the draft points.
Future first-round picks. I think the hang-up's going to be to whether or not the Texans could pull it off in this scenario. Let's say you have 12 and 25, like you pointed out. The hang-up's going to be, are those top two teams in need of a quarterback?
Sure.
Because if they're not like the Bears and already have a quarterback in place, then it almost doesn't even really matter what you offer them. They're just going to go ahead and take the quarterback.
I feel safe. I feel safe that the Texans, if they didn't address quarterback in this draft, they play the veteran quarterback market. Maybe it's you stash a Hendon Hooker. Totally like that idea. More as a fourth than a third. I feel safe thinking that the Texans have enough draft capital to trade into the top two. There is not a guarantee there because, like you said, if the top two teams absolutely desperate for quarterback, they're not going to trade those picks. So there's not a guarantee. But I feel safe that the Texans have enough draft capital that if one of those teams don't need quarterback, they could have the firepower to trade up.
Yeah, that's the fear because you've seen, obviously, with Indianapolis, you've seen with Washington, you've seen a lot of these teams kind of go through the motions of playing the, you know, veteran quarterback carousel over the last year, whether it be, Baker Mayfield, obviously with the Colts, you brought in Phillip Rivers and Carson Wentz, and Carson Wentz was in Washington as well. It just, every year we do this where we see the veteran quarterback change from one location to another, and maybe it's kind of we fall into the change of scenery trap, but we always convince ourselves, and maybe this is more of a fantasy football perspective, but we always convince ourselves, oh, well, this is going to be a lot better because we think this guy has talent, and now he's in a different location. And nine times out of ten, ends up being the same mediocre play, just in a different colored uniform.
Yeah,
so I'm a little bit worried that it's playing kind of high stakes poker here. And if you lose, the results are pretty disastrous if you get stuck in kind of the revolving door that some of these other teams have done at quarterback.
It could also raise the roof, though. It could also be the scenario where you have the most ceiling. It like the word you used earlier was volatile. Like this would be a volatile way to do it because it could go one of two ways.
Then it's a home run.
Or even if it's not Hendon Hooker, or maybe it's the Browns are awful next year and they have the third pick.
Yeah.
You know, so there's different scenarios that get you your desired goal.
Right.
But that's the only way I would play the veteran coach market. Now, if you want to lose, or the veteran quarterback market. Now, if you want to lose, just sign Carson Wentz and have your slogan be Winston Barrett for one more year.
I like it. 713-T-shirts.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. How about that demise of Jalen Green, huh? How about that demise of Jalen Green? It's been greatly exaggerated. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Razor Shark commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Somebody texting in. 5433. Branham, did you see 2027 U of H football opener versus LSU at NRG Stadium? Go Cougs! 4 exclamation points. I did see that. I hadn't heard that either, so I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited about all the things coming up at Houston. Obviously, the rest of this basketball season, baseball season.
Is that the
Big 12 on the horizon?
Texas kickoff, or what, yeah, is that what they branded it?
It will be the – is that? I mean, I think they're still calling it that, right?
I think that's right. So, yeah, LSU and the UH at Energy in 2027? That's,
no,
yeah.
I mean –
obviously, the UH had that great game. I can't remember what year it was.
Oklahoma.
I know you will. It was against Oklahoma.
It was 2015 because it was the year after they won the Peach Bowl.
Right. Yeah. Back with the coach that we will not name, but yeah.
Tom Herman?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know if you'd want to name the name. I don't. As a Longhorn fan, I don't want to name the name.
Yeah, that was the Baker Mayfield. That was Baker Mayfield, NRG, and Houston pounded them.
Yeah, that was not a game.
Yeah, Ed Oliver's. I'm pretty sure that was the first game of the season too. So
that was
Ed Oliver's first collegiate football game. That was all because he wasn't on the Peach Bowl team. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I think I'm going to be flying away this afternoon, hopefully. And hopefully if I do, it's safe.
Maybe not afternoon. Might be evening or nighttime.
Yeah, 5:30 was my scheduled flight time. I haven't seen delays on it, although I did see that the winds at Hobby were 60 miles per hour.
I don't think you're taking off of
terrifying.
That. Yeah, you're not taking off of that.
What, you put my over-under at, what, 9:05?
Yeah, to be a jerk. Leave? Actually, I said 9:15, but I was more so trying to be mean to you.
Were you being a jerk or were you being for real?
I think it could be 9:15. It started off as being a jerk, but I think 9:15 actually might not be too far off.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm thinking about maybe banging this flight and head out tomorrow.
I think you hit the airport bar and sip on some gentle bins and just wait and relax for the flight.
I do have the flask. That'd be a good idea. Are you a drink on a flight kind of guy?
Now, to be honest, I haven't taken a whole lot of flights in my life, like a grand total of 4.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't mind the drink. I don't need the drink to calm my nerves. Flying has never really made me nervous, but if you got a good whiskey or a bourbon, I would definitely partake.
Yeah, that's about what I am. I don't love turbulence. I don't think that's a feeling that anybody's ever going to be comfortable with.
No one enjoys it, but it doesn't freak me out.
But I'm not scared of flying.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather not go through turbulence.
Sure.
You know, but I'm not. It's not going to prevent me from flying. Now, I do have some vouchers. So if you give me a free drink, I'll take 3. So,
well, I imagine as much as you fly, you've got to have something.
I have some of the vouchers that I think I'm going to partake in, especially if this flight has 60 mile per hour winds as I'm taking off.
I think you're going to need.
I might have several.
Yeah, you might need a lot of gentle bends.
Rockets yesterday snapped that 13 game losing streak. Killer Bees told you it was going to happen. Killer Bees told you that the streak was going to come to an end. We just didn't know how many games it would take.
Yeah,
I think Blankers had it at 15.
You did both predict that it was going to end.
We both predicted that the streak was going to end.
Joel a little bit closer than you on that one.
Yeah, I think he was at 15. I think I was at 17. But
yeah,
we were both right.
Ending tonight.
We were both right that the streak was going to come to an end. And the Rockets ended that streak yesterday. The story in this one to me is Jalen Green. And we had a caller in the last segment yesterday say that the Rockets should build around Alpi Shingun and not Jalen Green. Quite honestly, you can build around both. Like, I think it's really nice to have a really good offensive guard and a really good offensive big man.
Yeah, I don't know why you would have to limit yourself to either the guard or the big man.
I think the conversation
would have both.
Exactly. Like, it's different nights, too. Like, Jalen Green might be hot one night where he can drop 42 in a game, a career high, like he did yesterday, and has had 2 40 burgers in the last 3 games. You could have a night where he's cold and you go through Alpi Shingun to generate some offense. Or it could be dependent of who you're playing. Like, if you have a really good, like Rudy Gobert played yesterday for Minnesota. Didn't play 2 nights ago when they played
bad
in Minnesota.
For Shingun.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, no Rudy Gobert, Shingun can go off. Rudy Gobert, all of a sudden Shingun's going to be limited a little bit, and that's a night where you go through Jalen Green. So there's no, like, to me there shouldn't be an either or when it comes to Jalen Green or Alpi Shingun. But there should be an either or when it comes to Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. Jalen Green in his last 5 games, BMAC, with no Kevin Porter Jr. Kevin Porter Jr. has missed 6 games, but Jalen Green was suspended for 1 of them. Jalen Green has played his last 5 games with no Kevin Porter Jr. In those 5 games, Jalen Green's averaging over 28.5 points a game. He's shooting nearly 50% from the floor, and he's shooting 42% from 3. That's the player that everybody's hoping Jalen Green will be to become a star in the NBA. Because that is star numbers. 28.5, 50% from the floor, 42% from 3. That is a star and an elite score. Jalen Green in the previous 41 games. Kevin Porter Jr. has been around the previous 41. Jalen Green, under 21.5 points, a 40% shooter, 32% three-point shooter. When Kevin Porter Jr. is not on the floor, the last five games with Jalen Green has scored over 7 points more. He shoots 10% better from the floor and 10% better from three. We said this a month ago without having the tangible evidence that it was true. Kevin Porter Jr. is bad for Jalen Green. And the Rockets are going to have to go into the offseason, maybe sooner rather than later, and come to this realization that Kevin Porter Jr. is stunting the growth of Jalen Green.
Yeah, I agree with you, because we just spent time talking about how you don't have to choose. You can have both with Jalen Green and Şengün, because they're different types of players that play different positions, attack the defenses in different ways. But when you run into the situation with Porter and Green, and maybe they're trying to do some of the same things, you could run into the same problems that we saw the ill-fated combo of Russell Westbrook and James Harden. It's not that you can't have two guys on the wing that are both playmakers. They just have to be guys that go about it the different way, that don't mind being taking a back seat or coming off the ball where one guy's more ball dominant. But if they're both going about it the same way, trying to do the same things, there definitely is some natural redundancy, and I think it would stunt the growth of Jalen Green. So I think for the long-term health of the team and for Jalen Green specifically, because I think the long-term health of the franchise is the health of Jalen Green, I do think it'd be a wise move to move Kevin Porter on.
Like, there's probably three things that are going to define who the Houston Rockets are for the next 5 to 7 years. I think this year's draft lottery is one of them, because there's
the next coaching hire.
The next coaching hire will be very critical, and then the development of Jalen Green.
And if you want to throw Jabari Smith in that too, that
if
too.
If you want to throw Alpi and Jabari as like bullet points to the development of young players, I'm cool with that. Now, I think Jalen Green needs to be higher on the pecking order than Şengün and Jabari. Now, he might not be higher on the pecking order of Victor. He might not be higher on the pecking order of
Depending on what happens with the draft lottery, then Jalen Green might be the second bullet point instead of the first. But certainly, for the guys in the roster currently, I think his development is the most important.
Those are the biggest three things for the health of the Rockets organization for the next 5 to 7 years. You have to get those three things. They have to kind of hit. You don't necessarily need a top two draft pick this year to hit on that draft pick, but the odds go way up, because we think Victor's going to be great. We think Scoot Henderson's going to be great, and the Rockets kind of need a point guard. So Scoot Henderson, even if you finish at number two and you miss out on the Victor sweepstakes, at least you get what you think is going to be a really good point guard. So this year's draft, like, you need to hit on this year's draft. Hopefully it's a top two pick. Secondly, you have to get development of your young core. Jalen Green at the height of that list right now. Şengün's in the conversation. Jabari's in the conversation. And we're seeing it play out on the floor right now that Jalen Green is a much better player. He goes from being a pretty good player to a really good player when Kevin Porter Jr. is not on the floor with him. So that has to be the second big thing. And you're right. The third big thing has to be that you get a coach who's going to walk into the room and he's going to command power across the board, whether it's from the players, whether it's from the front office. And I don't even think you need to move on from Rafael Stone, but you have to have that voice that's the ultimate basketball voice that no one's messing with, that no one's going to bother with.
Well, that you just hit on, the no one messes with, the no one bothers with. Right. I think the question of can Rafael Stone be a part of this going forward, at least for the health of the franchise, is if he tries to mess with that head coach. Because a lot of the problems, look, and I think a lot of what John Wall said was at least slightly inaccurate or maybe overblown. But I do think there is a problem with maybe some of the young players that need to develop, not necessarily respecting the coaches that are in charge, because they don't think he's the ultimate decision maker. He's not where the buck stops. So if you do get that coach that does demand the respect, I think hopefully in that situation the general manager wouldn't be meddling as much as we reportedly believe he is currently, and that would definitely be a big step up for the development of Jalen Green and all the other young players.
Biggest takeaway for me last night's game, though, and really the last five that Jalen Green's play without Kevin Porter Jr., is that KPJ stunned the growth of Jalen Green. 1509, Kevin Porter Jr. would be a sixth man of the year kind of guy, not playing alongside Jalen Green. I agree. Like, I think that's a great role for Kevin Porter Jr. The problem is Kevin Porter Jr. thinks he's the star.
He's got to be able to accept that role is the problem.
He thinks he's a star. He thinks he's the point guard of the Rockets. And he is the point guard of the Rockets. He shouldn't be. And he's not the star of the Houston Rockets. All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks so much, B-Mac, pinch hitting and being a little bit of talent today. Showed off your versatility today.
I went
B-Mac.
From
great
not
job.
Talent to a little bit of talent.
Yeah.
I got promoted.
Yeah, great 30 minutes from Blank before his daughter got a fever and he had to go pick her up. But we wish her well. He was Blink. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston football. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.